At LensCrafters, we value expertly tailored eye care, provide state-of-the-art eye exams, offer a wide assortment of designer brands and high-quality lenses, because everything we do at LensCrafters is for every sight that makes your life special. We offer 50% off lenses with frame purchase, shop in-store and online. Book your annual eye exam now on LensCrafters.com. LensCrafters, because sight. Eye exams are available at the independent doctor of optometry at or next to LensCrafters. Doctors in some states are employed by LensCrafters. Offer valid through April 2nd, 2023. See associate for details.
Hello and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. No Jets beanie this week for all the people who can't see Joe. He's just, I guess he's just settled in. No beanie today. What's up with that?
It's going to be 40 degrees again tomorrow. So, but it's 55 here. I got back from sunny Orlando. The weather was like perfect. It was 70s mostly and survived the spring break crowds, Sean. And I had a great trip with my extended family, my parents and my sister's family as well. Sean, I didn't tell you. And I'll talk about this on Disney Deciphered, but my sister's family being there was the perfect excuse to try a VIP tour for the first time.
Nice.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was really nice. But the funny thing is that I don't know if my sister and brother-in-law noticed a big difference in their park experience between the VIP tour and me, because I realized during the VIP tour that I am the VIP guide. Except for no one's paying me hundreds of dollars an hour.
And you can't sneak people in the back entrance of rides like they do with the VIP tour. I know you're going to talk about it on Disney Deciphered, so just give us a little bit of basic information and then people can listen more. What's the cost and then how many people are included with the cost?
So the cost varies from $450 to $900 per hour, depending on like how busy it is. So like Christmas will be like $900 an hour and dead times are going to be $450. Up to 10 people per guide. So if you have anything over that, so my parents took that day off because there was 10 of us without that. You have to do a minimum of 7 hours. They do not get you through the back door necessarily. They're generally going through the lightning lanes, but from ride to ride, it will vary like how far in the lightning lane you can go. So for example, Remy's Ratatouille Adventure, which I know some MTM people did in the meetup a couple years ago, it will go through the single rider line, which if you are a nerd, you know that there is no single rider line at Remy's Ratatouille Adventure. So you just basically go straight onto the ride. Whereas other attractions, notably Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind, we had to wait through the whole entire lightning lane that took us like 20, 25 minutes. You know, you get free snacks and drinks. We ended up watching a parade from the train station. That was really cool. So overall, really great. But realistically, and let me be clear, I do not do this for all of my clients just because it was my sister and my parents, but I was like running Genie Plus and telling them to go here and there and like we were splitting the group, all that stuff. They did not have too noticeably of a different experience when hanging out with me. So it can be done, but it made a big difference. Sean, I will say really quickly, and I'll say this on Disney Decipher too, I think that if you have like 8 to 10 fairly like-minded adults together, let's say you had 7 to make it easy, right? Then everyone's paying for 1 hour. Let's say it's $600 an hour. I just like, it is a really cool experience. You get to drive backstage. You don't have to like take the buses from park to park. They drive you and you can get a lot done. We got with our slow kids, with having to stop to eat, with stopping for a parade, we got 12 attractions done on the day in 7 hours in 3 different theme parks. And so, you know, Sean, I think maybe the next MTM Diamond meetup, if people, the times we've had meetups in Disney World in December, like it would probably, my guess would be at most $650 an hour. I probably less than that. If you get 10 people, I don't know. It's worth doing once.
Or just find yourself a Disney World nerd, pay them $500 for the day and they can do what Joe did for his family. I thought they brought you back in the back entrances. Maybe that's at Disneyland or maybe they've changed it, but I know I've heard, you know, and they also have obviously different levels for celebrities and stuff where they help them keep out of the park. I know specifically at Disneyland, they do that. But, you know, the tour guides are very knowledgeable too, right? So they're providing a great experience through the day and all the background info. And It sucks that they don't have a single rider line. It's so stupid because it's three seats on Remy's Ratatouille Adventure. This is going off the rails here on the Disney side, but yeah, it's good. I mean, it's another sign that, you know, there's people that live in different worlds. Different worlds exist that, you know, you may never know. And if you're willing to pay for it, you can get a great experience that's well above, you know, just imagine the average person who doesn't know Disney World going on their once every 4 year vacation compared to that. And I think, you know, it's probably worth it for some people in doing it. And I do agree with you. If you have like 10 people each willing to pay, you know, 1/10, that sort of takes some of the sting out of it. Or you just have a, you know, a rich friend who wants to pay for the whole group.
I asked a bunch of questions. Find a friend who's a Club 33. They get 5 VIP tours included with their membership every single year. I asked like a bunch of questions about like celebrities and stuff like that. It is crazy, the stories that you hear. So if you ever see me in person and you want to hear some stories about that, about getting through the back door, Disneyland, Fantasyland, you're going to get through the back door because there is no lightning lane. And yes, celebrities get special treatment. Cool thing I found out was like for celebrities, though, they have to negotiate with every single ride, like exactly what's going to happen. And so like, you can, for example, a celebrity can skip a pre-show, but if they want to do a pre-show just by themselves, like they can't do that. Even like, I mean, you have to be like the president or something like that to do that. Because if you skip a pre-show, that's like 300 people. Or if you get a pre-show only to yourself, that's like 300 people that aren't seeing, or maybe 150 people that aren't seeing that pre-show. And that's really affecting operations, but you can skip the pre-show, which is probably better, especially on Guardians. There's too many pre-shows.
Oh man, I'm over the pre-shows. Disney is like all in on these multiple pre-shows on their new rides. And after you see it the first time, you're like, just get me through this room, get me into the line, get me on the ride as fast as possible. So
I only want Haunted Mansion. That's it. Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
Love that pre-show. You know, it's just classic, but.
Absolutely. So yeah, Disney Deciphered, check that out. He'll go into more detail, all of the logistics you need for that. Quickly talk Vegas. We have a lot of credit card, a lot of miles and points stuff to talk about, but Tropicana is closing today as we record this. One of the most historic properties on the Las Vegas Strip. One I have a lot of ties to. So I went over there yesterday and filmed, you know, the last day. It was kind of sad. It closes. I'm actually going to go for the closing right after we record this, but yeah, changing tides in Las Vegas as the A's Stadium draws closer, I guess, hopefully, if they can get funding and stuff like that. We'll cover that on the Vegas show. So just wanted to talk about Tropicana. I'm sad to watch a property like that go away.
Yeah, it's been ever since I've been going to Vegas, of course, it's been there. It's always like, yeah, it's like, obviously, places need to modernize, you're going to get new properties and stuff like that. But it's sad to see the old ones go. It's closing today. When do they schedule the implosions and stuff like that? Because I know it's always a big deal. You know, you're gonna get to film an implosion in a couple months.
Well, they've said it's gonna be. Well, this is really stupid because the property's birthday is in 2 days on April 3rd, and they couldn't allow it to get to its birthday, which makes no sense. And Bally's is the current owner. They've let it go to complete crap. I mean, 90% of the restrooms are closed. All the landscaping's been let go for months now. They didn't sort of give it the send off that it deserved. But they said they're going to start taking it down in October, so it's going to be sitting there for a while. No news on implosion yet. They said it's a possibility based on permitting, but there's some asbestos. It's really close to the airport, which could cause issues for flights with the dust cloud and stuff. So we really don't know. But I guess if they do it kind of in the middle of the night, maybe not as much of an effect on the airport. But so, yeah, we're hoping for an implosion, but we don't know quite yet. But it is gone either way, whether it sits as a dirt lot. Bally's in a lot of financial trouble, so we don't know if they'll be able to build a casino to replace it. And the A's still don't have financing for their stadium. But the earliest the construction of that would start is about a year from now. And the A's are still many years away from coming to Las Vegas. So there is a chance that it just ends up as a dirt lot sitting there for many years if they can't get this all figured out.
So if that's the A's stadium, theoretically, then at least people are going to be able to walk to that one, right? And so, you know, that'll be a little bit better than Allegiant.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen the renderings of it? It looks very much like the Sydney Opera House. The A's put out renderings of it, views of the strip. It'll be completely enclosed. Originally, they had said retractable roof, but they've gone away from that, which I think makes fine sense. There's not a lot of days where you're going to have that roof open. So it's going to be a dome stadium with glass views of the strip. I think the stadium looks absolutely beautiful. You know, there's a lot of talk of whether it's going to actually fit on the 9 acres of the 33-acre site that they have. if they can get financing for it. Yeah, I mean, changing tide in Vegas, and you know, traffic's going to suck there, Joe, for a baseball stadium. But as far as pedestrian access, it's great. And I think Las Vegas, if you build a baseball stadium there, Allegiant is fairly accessible just across the freeway. There's a bridge there, T-Mobile Arena, very accessible. So I think Las Vegas has probably location-wise one of the better kind of sets of arenas and stadiums, especially given that it's all in the tourist corridor where you have, you know, over 150,000 hotel rooms, you know, within just a couple miles.
Yeah, I think that'll be pretty cool. Hey, speaking of Allegiant, really quickly, I didn't put this on the agenda, but I had a quick question for you. Because of all this money that I just spent, I am seriously, and because we talked last week about this, I'm seriously considering trying out Spirit. I'm going to be flying down with three kids from Charlotte to Orlando in a couple of weeks. And Spirit, even if I paid for carry-on bags, which I'm probably going to have to do, it's still going to come in as like half of what American Airlines is going to be. And I feel like this is like a perfect time. It's less than 2 hours, blah, blah, blah. Here's a question for you, Sean. I don't know right now. I can't like think it through. Am I going to need two carry-on bags or three carry-on bags, right? I'm not sure about that. Like backpacks, I know, and backpacks are covered or whatever. So it's like an extra $5 to $10 to wait to add the third one. Should I just, what would you do? Would you just add two now or just add the three and then work with it?
I'd probably just add the two and then do my best to get there. But I guess it's realistically how, what are the odds that you're going to need the third? And then is it going to add stress trying to like put it down? What is the cost? Like $35 for a carry-on ahead of time? Is it worth, you know, stressing out later or trying to figure that out, especially if you're saving half, like you said, it's going to be half the price.
Yeah, I need to look into it because when I was on the Spirit website yesterday, it was trying to charge me like $50, $57 for a carry-on bag. But then Googling it today, it's supposed to be less. So I definitely need to like look through and make sure that I do find like one thing about the experience of trying to book something. And I was just, you know, I was in a daze last night looking at it. So that's why I didn't book anything. I can see why people will buy the wrong thing or because it's not, it just didn't, I think purposely, it's just not as clear as I would possibly want it to be. And so like, I was like, so last night I was like, okay, I'm leaning towards doing this. I even texted Mark about it, by the way. Oh, and I should throw in, I didn't even mention this. This is with four big front seats. We're still half of American, you know, and that is with American, like I'm going to be have seats in the back and stuff, right? So this is why I'm leaning towards it. But I'm like, I need to be fully conscious, fully awake, read like all the fine print when I'm doing it, this, especially since it's my first time. And thank you, Sean, for the Frontier status. I was looking at Frontier, but it's more expensive. And also the times don't work out as well, which is why I'm going for Spirit. But we'll see. Stay tuned.
Yeah, it was timely because we talked about the low-cost carriers in the last show. And then I got an email because I have the 100K status from, or the top tier status, I think it's Diamond now, from the match that I did. And that gives you the ability to gift gold status. And I got an email literally like a day or two later saying that your gift is about to expire. So I gave it to Joe. So Joe is now Frontier Gold since they don't have the status match going right now. Yeah, I think that, you know, with low-cost carriers, you just have to be aware of the big picture. It sounds like in your case, no matter how you slice it, you're going to come out ahead getting better seats and all your bags and stuff. But a big turnoff, I think, for people is there's 8 million screens trying to upsell you stuff from rental cars to hotels to, you know, the seats, the bags. And it can be a little overwhelming to click through that many things where if you book with, obviously with Southwest, it's very simple, or even American and the other airlines, there's just a lot less options and it doesn't feel like you're being upsold at every opportunity. But, you know, that's how they make their money. And if you know how to navigate that, it's good. And yeah, just be aware. A lot of people try to sneak bigger bags on. And I would say it's about 50-50 where I've seen on these low-cost carriers where they check the bags at the gate. So obviously, if you're bringing a big bag, they are going to know pretty quickly. But if something's like marginal, like maybe marginally bigger than the free carry-on, you know, like the backpack or something, they may charge it at the... They may check it at the gate and then you're going to pay more. And they're not as bad as like Ryanair. I remember Ryanair, they charge you for even printing a boarding pass at the airport. And then back in the day, it's been a few years since I flew them, but it was like £35 or something for a carry-on. And then if you did it at the gate, you got caught at the gate, it was £100 the last time I flew them. So they have huge penalties for knocking you at the gate. And I do think Spirit and Frontier, and they do charge more if you kind of get to the gate and you're not paid for it. But I think it's all worth a try, and people should, you know, smart consumers will figure that out. And like you said, 2-hour flight, well, big front seat, that's great. Big front seats are basically like domestic first class seats without the service. They're a little stiffer, I would say, a little less padding. But even in the back, if you're saving the money, 2-hour flight, 29-inch pitch, I've done it, and I think I will do it if I need to. I mean, I obviously appreciate 32, 33, 34-inch pitch as somebody who's 6'2". But I guess the height depends a lot, too. Jasmine's 4'11", and doesn't bother her at all. So, you know, that's something to consider as well. But I'm glad that we're putting it on the radar. People should consider it. And all this nonsense of people who've never flown them or flown them once saying, you know, write them off, you know, try it for yourself. And I don't know, like I said, dozens of flights on these carriers, and I haven't had any of the issues I've had on others. There are people that do have issues, just like with any airline. So I always like to knock on wood when I say that, because I know I'm just asking for it by putting it out there.
Well, Mark was saying that operationally he had found Spirit to be better than like an American Airlines. And so obviously the test is if something goes wrong, I figure my backup is, you know, we're going to be going on a cruise. So like we need to be in there by at least the next morning. But Charlotte to Orlando, there are so many American Airlines flights that in the worst case scenario, I can pay American later. I thought the other thing that I found that was interesting was when I was looking at the carry-on fees and stuff like that, they actually, the size is 22 by 18 by 10, whereas most domestic carriers is 22 by 14 by 9. And so there's an extra 5 inches in the dimensions there, which is going to give you more cubic inches. I'm not going to do the math here right now, but I thought that was interesting because I saw the numbers and I was like, is that smaller? Just because it was numbers like I didn't recognize. And so I looked it up and, you know, 22 by 18 by 10 is bigger. And so I'm a little worried about my backpack. My backpack is like huge. They might end up calling that a carry-on anyway. But in terms of actual luggage you can bring, that's like closer to a medium-sized luggage, which if you're like doing the math and if you're traveling light with just carry-on bags, they're not going to give you as much trouble as, you know, although domestically, typically they don't make you, even the legacy carriers don't make you put your bags in the little like things where they like test how big it is and you try to stuff it in and stuff like that. But I thought that was interesting that you get a couple extra inches there.
Yeah, they definitely don't. Flying American, you'll often see crazy size luggage and you're like, how is that a carry-on? One tip for people who are carry-on only when you're traveling internationally is try to buy a luggage that is the smaller, you know, of the standards, because some, especially low-cost carriers, but some other carriers internationally, they have different sort of rules and sizes. I have the Away, you know, carry-on luggage, and they make two sizes. They make a full-size carry-on and then a slightly smaller one. I bought the slightly smaller one just because I know that it'll go on any airline in the world, and I don't have to worry about what the size is with that. And I really do like Away. They're very expensive, but I got it right in early COVID when they were trying to dump their inventory and got like 70% off or something crazy like that. And I don't know if I ever talked about it on the show, but the zippers broke on both of our luggages, which I guess is a problem, but they have a lifetime warranty and Away just sent us brand new luggages. So good warranty on them as well. And they are high quality. And when I say zippers broke, we were traveling full time for a couple of years. Those were our suitcases. So they got a lot of use before they broke, probably more use than most people would use a suitcase for in 10 years or something. They roll really nice. It's my favorite suitcase I've ever had. And you know, I'm glad with that. So I'd like to give them a shout out. But just be aware of the sizes, because if you buy one of the kind of max size carry-ons, you may run into issues in other countries when you're traveling with that, because I've definitely seen those smaller sizes, even smaller than what you're saying with American and stuff. So keep that in mind. And I still put a week's worth of stuff in my carry-on without a problem. It's so freeing, man, not to check bags. So freeing.
I believe that.
So let's move on. Let's talk airlines, but airline credit cards this time, and American Express. And they put new language in their Delta SkyMiles cards this week for churners. Now, they've had language in there before, you know, saying that in their discretion that they can, you know, deny you a bonus if you abuse, misuse, or game in connection with the offer that you get. Basically, downgrading in 12 months is something that you really shouldn't do with American Express, because I think at this point they've been very clear that they consider that abuse in some way. But they added some language to the cards. If you have a history of canceling or downgrading American Express card accounts within your first year, and you cancel or downgrade in the first year. So they're, I think, getting more specific. Maybe they realized that their language in our sole discretion was I don't know, legally not good. I don't know what the reason for the change is, but you know, we keep seeing more and more of this language with American Express cards. Just an idea, if you're going to sign up, probably should keep them 12 months, and they're looking at your entire relationship, not just the card that you get. So, you know, if you downgrade a card, you may lose the bonus, but it may screw you up with other cards as well. And, you know, we haven't heard a lot of anecdotal evidence of that, you know, going across all your accounts, but, you know, largely they're using the pop-up, it seems, where you apply and it'll say, well, you're not eligible for this card because you've gotten too many bonuses or because of your behavior or whatever. But just be aware that this language is changing constantly with American Express, and they are definitely putting churners on their radar.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen American Express be, I wouldn't say the most aggressive. I feel like Chase going 524 was probably the most aggressive. But say what you want about 524, at least it's simple, not necessarily good for us, right? But you know, 524, yes, you have to like count and do some bookkeeping, but you basically know. I think American Express has been kind of the most, in a lot of ways, it's better for us because we can play the game and play by the rules and get extra cards, get extra points. But at the same time, they have changed the rules the most number of times. You, actually, they're the only ones, right? They feel like the only ones who are like, they're like playing the game along with us. You know, miles and points people, they figure out how to get extra bonuses, then American Express adjusts. And this is just another example of that. It keeps it interesting. It gives us something to talk about. It doesn't seem like, you know, it definitely could have been worse. I feel like American Express is just once again trying to protect themselves a little bit from what's going on.
Totally agree. And we've seen record bonuses the last, you know, 4 years, and things have been pretty lucrative if you have a good relationship with them. And I think more so than any other bank, American Express is a bank that if you're in with them, you're really good and you're golden. And when you're not, they hate you. And, you know, you see this from anecdotal evidence. You can read about how they approach people who file bankruptcy or have go into default and how aggressive they are in trying to get that. But just in every sort of aspect, if you have a good relationship with them, they're not going to run your credit. Most of the time, they're going to give you a lot of approvals. They're looking at the overall relationship. And like I said, if it goes bad, then you lose out on a lot. So I like that they're just putting it out there. They're, you know that if you downgrade an account in the first 12 months, you know what to expect, and you know that you could possibly lose the bonus. But more importantly, you could lose other bonuses and the ability to get other cards and, you know, play the long game is what I would say. And, you know, usually after 12 months, you can downgrade or cancel. Sometimes you can get retention offers, so they can be generous with that as well. So it's not like it's the end of the world where you have to get a card and keep it forever. But they expect when you're signing up that you're going to keep it for a year. You're paying the annual fee. They're expecting that. And in most cases, you know, you just got to do that. But a lot of people were churning through cards. And, you know, when you have a limited number of card slots, what do you give up? You know, people canceling cards right away or whatever. And they clearly don't want that. They want the long-term business. And they really value that, I think, more than any other bank.
Totally agree. The game will just continue. And I think that's totally fine. I do. It's funny you say that. Yes. When you're on Amex bad side, it's probably one of the worst feeling banks to be on the bad side of, especially because, like I said, like it's been fairly consumer friendly and us friendly just over the course of history. So it's tough to lose them.
So on the topic of American Express, they changed the Hilton business card. They added $240 in credits. They raised the annual fee $100, and then you lost priority pass and free night awards. So overall, I think a downgrade on this card, but let's start with the positive stuff. You'll earn 5X Hilton Honors points on up to $100,000 in purchases each year. Then it goes to 3X, $240 in new credits on eligible Hilton purchases. That's $60 per quarter. And then you get some car rental status and you get a new sleek metal design. So a new card design, but no more free night awards. So that really is taken away. No more priority pass. And then, as I said, the annual fee from $95 up to $195, and then the 6X categories are going away. So 6X on gas stations is a big one, restaurants, flights. So you're stuck with that 5X on the first 100K. Overall, I think that this is probably a big downgrade for most people getting this card.
Yeah. First of all, can we just, you know, I've said this before, don't put new sleek metal design DDG. Don't put that as a positive change. Okay. We don't care. I mean, I know some people care. I don't care. Yeah, I think losing the 6X is like a big loss. And then the free night rewards benefit, I feel like that was one of, I mean, that is one of the best things about the Hilton cards. And to lose that, you know, it does not feel good. I do think that I'm sure that there's people are going to figure out how to get the maximum out of the 240 back each year. You know, I'd be surprised if people haven't figured that out already, right? But overall, I think I don't love these changes. And plus, you know, the annual fee is going up to 195. So you have to make sure you take advantage of that 240 a year to make sure you're not like paying for this card when you don't need to.
Yeah, the coupon book gremlins are happy about this. You know, another Amex card coupon booked with needing to do that. I think some people were trying to buy Hilton gift cards online. I haven't seen data points to prove that the credit worked properly. One of the nice things, this was announced last week, it doesn't help anybody who's listening now, but some people were able to kind of get cards in right before the quarter ended. So they tried out on Hilton gift cards. So if you can just buy Hilton gift cards, maybe that makes it a little bit easier. Buy a $60 gift card or, you know, something like that every quarter, and then maybe it makes it easier. But I'm tired of cards with big annual fees where I have to do that, where I have to keep spinning the hamster wheel to try to get my value back. And we talked about that before. So this isn't for me. And, you know, Priority Pass, I think a lot of people in this hobby have it from so many cards. I don't know if it's a huge change, but I can imagine business owners who had it with this card. You know, it's not a thing. And then, of course, it's doubling the annual fee too. So there's a lot being taken away and it's costing twice as much. And really the only sort of new thing you're getting, I guess you're getting 5X on everything for up to the 100K, which is nice, I guess, if you weren't hitting the bonus categories, because it was 3X before and then you're getting the credits. But to me, it doesn't outweigh the negative changes and then double the fee, and just not something that's a card that I would get at this point.
Agreed.
So Priority Pass, let's talk that then. Let's move on. Unfortunately, you know, Priority Pass is big, but over the years, we've seen them add more and more restaurants instead of lounges, which is good because in some airports, the lounges are overloaded. But of course, as more and more restaurants were added and people started learning how to maximize those, some cards lost that benefit. And so I think coming into, you know, this month, the cards that still had that benefit are the City Prestige, the Venture X Business, the Sapphire Reserve, the Ritz-Carlton card, and then the UBS Visa Infinite card. But unfortunately, the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Ritz-Carlton card are losing the restaurant benefit. So you'll still get Priority Pass with access to lounges, but you won't get that restaurant benefit. I haven't used it tremendously often over the years, but it has been nice. I remember in Houston last year, we used it at Landry's going and coming, and I do try to squeeze them in when I can, but I'm not somebody who goes out of my way. But there are people who live in places where they have multiple restaurants in the airport and they've been able to do very well. Portland is an example of that. And just another card losing it. It's a big hit for people who have that Ritz card. A lot of people hold that card because it has such a great Priority Pass benefit and you know, free night benefit and all of that. But Sapphire Reserve too, this is taking a little shine off of it as well.
Yeah, I think for sure. I've mentioned multiple times, but my dad like loves this benefit. You know, every time he's like, I don't know about you, Sean, but like when I get to the airport, like I just want to leave immediately. And so, you know, if someone's picking me up from the airport, I'm like, yo, my flight lands here. I'm sitting in even more space at the front. I'm going to be at the door in 15 minutes. So please come get me. My dad's always like, when he comes with my mom to visit Boston, he's always like, yeah, come get us an hour and a half, 2 hours. We're just going to go to Stephanie's. Well, now he can't go to he'll probably still go to Stephanie's and just pay for it. No, I don't think he will actually. But, you know, now he's not going to be able to go to Stephanie's and use his Chase Sapphire Reserve thing. I feel for this guy. And last time he tried to go to the Sapphire Lounge here in Boston, it was like too crowded anyway. So he ended up, of course, Sean, at Stephanie's. So I think it is another kind of just loss that I do feel like, yes, some of us try to game it, but I've mentioned this before, but like the Sapphire Reserve is a card that a lot of just normal people or, you know, business travelers or whatever get. And these are benefits that have been useful to them in the past. And so I think this is another loss. We dealt with it when we lost it at Amex. I think this is something that kept Sapphire Reserve up ahead of, you know, especially because Amex was like upping their platinum fees higher and higher and higher. Like this kept Sapphire Reserve ahead of that curve a little bit. And it sucks that it's being lost now.
Totally agree. And I think that this is another notch in the cap for VentureX business. Hopefully it stays, you know, with VentureX, but you have the good Capital One lounges and you get this as well. And like I said, I haven't been one that's used it all too often, but, you know, like in Houston last year, we were flying out at dinner time and we arrived at dinner time. So it sort of made sense. But I'm more like you where I want to get in and out of the airport quicker. But there is something like 25 or more airports now that have it. So it's a lot more widespread than it used to be when it first launched, and certainly a benefit. So I guess if you want that, the VentureX business is really the way to go. You can't get the Citi Prestige card anymore, and the other card is more of a niche card. So I think for most people, the VentureX business, if this is important to you, and you know, now that it's the only card that really has it, the only sort of mainstream card that has it, you can get a lot of value out of that with that lower annual fee on the VentureX business. It makes that card look even better, I think. All right, more credit card news. Robinhood is launching a 3% cash back credit card, Joe. Now, we don't have any 3% cash back credit cards on, you know, flat 3%. It's because financially, it just doesn't make sense given interchange fees, especially on a no annual fee card. So there's a lot of skepticism about this, and they have a wait list forming now, but you can't get the card right now, but you can sign up to do it. The only sort of thing that you have to have is Robinhood Gold status, which is, I think, $6 a month. But you can get it cheaper if you pay it annually. And that gives you a higher interest rate on some of your, you know, money sitting in an account there, the ability to move money quicker, some kind of benefits. So if you use Robinhood, that's good. But, you know, even if you pay that and you're getting 3% everywhere, this would be a card, I think, for a lot of people. So you have to be gold to be able to sign up. We have a link for it. If you get 10 referrals, so I'd love to get 10 referrals, you actually get a solid gold credit card when it comes out. If not, you'll get a like a stainless steel version of the card. If they can deliver this, no annual fee other than paying Robinhood Gold, and even if you look at that as the annual fee, and 3% everywhere, no foreign transaction fees, it has all your typical, you know, auto rental, all those types of, you know, trip delay, all those types of benefits, this seems like it's too good to be true.
Yeah. The second I heard 3%, I'm like, 3% and Robinhood, just like, it's just red flags all over the place. I'm sure that, well, I'm not even sure, but let's say it does launch. It just doesn't feel like the type of thing that is going to last forever. I mean, we just know that, like, I don't know how Robinhood can make the math work, right? Unless it's like a gigantic loss leader and it's some kind of scam to get you to like invest in Bitcoin or something like that, which, you know, I'm nothing against that. I mean, I have some crypto myself, but it's like, you know, we know that that is, I mean, that's not, it has not gone to the moon. Maybe it still will, right? But I just don't understand where the business model would be for that, except for it to maybe be 3% for like the first year and then dial it back. I mean, we even see with Discover, with when they double their 1.5% to 3%, that's only for a year. Like that would be much more believable. But like 3% permanently, how can you make that happen? How can that be profitable for Frito-Lay?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Maybe they're just going to keep it at 3% for a year. So they're doing the same thing as Discover, but they're just advertising it as 3% forever. And that's the thing about credit cards, they can change. But it also has like a lot of protections, trip interruption, purchase security, even return protection, you know, all the Visa benefits. So this card looks great. I have nothing bad to say about it. No annual fee. You can add authorized users. I'm guessing that the idea being they want to get you into Robinhood Gold, and then they're able to get higher net worth people to use their service for investing. And I guess that's probably the big picture thought here. You know, Apple hasn't even been able to make anything close to this work with their card. I don't see how Robinhood could make this work in any way. And obviously the bigger banks, you know, pretty much cap out at 2%, because with Discover, you know, it's their version of a sign-up bonus generally, or, you know, it's that sort of initial bonus, like you say, for a year. And so that is a loss leader for banks, because they're looking at your lifetime value and all of that. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Robinhood does this. But they made a big splash with it. They promising 3%, and you can join the wait list. And I certainly have. I don't believe you have to sign up for Gold now to join the wait list. And we'll put a link if you want to use my link, my personal referral link for that. But yeah, maybe I'll get a Gold card, Joe, and then it'll be all worth it for me. But I think that, that aside, referrals aside, that little carrot that they're dangling, if you can get 3% everywhere, you should do it.
Let's put this out there. My skepticism is that this will last, but on its surface, if it can't last, like whenever you can get 3%, remember the good old days, Sean, when we were always aiming for 5%, and it would be capped, but like, you know, you could do it on the dividend or whatever. I mean, I guess you can still get the, no, but it's still capped, the 5.25% if you have Platinum Preferred with Bank of America on their cash rewards card. It is 5% used to be gold standard, now 3%. Like, we never see anything like that anymore. So hopefully it lasts forever. I just, you know, call me a skeptic, Sean.
And you make a good point with Bank of America. If you have Platinum Honors, I think you can get, what, 2.625. You can cap out everywhere. But that does require a specific relationship with them, $100,000, all of that stuff. And then they are giving you more back. So that is currently, I think, the best everyday card if you have that status. So yeah, can't wait to see Robinhood do this and if they can make it work. Obviously, it's good for all of us if they can. And we'll report back on that. I should have talked about this earlier when we were talking Vegas, Joe, but Founders Card has, they made a comeback here. We talked about how they lost the Caesars Diamond benefit. A little history on this, because I've been dealing with Founders Card for quite a long time behind the scenes. For years, like in 2017, 2018, 2019-ish, I don't remember the exact years, but they were year to year with Caesars on this Diamond benefit. And over the years, I've kind of, you know, evolved to believe that this is the only reason to get Founders Card. I haven't found personally enough benefit from the other stuff to make it worth the fee. I pay $295 a year. But with this, it made sense to me. And obviously, there's the Wyndham Business Earner card. There's other ways to do it for people that are even cheaper now. But they were year to year. And then they signed a multi-year contract that ended earlier this year. And it seems like they're back to year to year. So they now extended it through 2025. The only difference from before is you have to earn 100 tier credits, which isn't a ton. But you can't to get the celebration dinner. For everything else, you can get it right away. But if you want that $100 dinner, which you used to just get, you need the 100 tier credits. And some people are reporting with the Wyndham Business Earner card that Caesars is saying this is the last year you'll get the $100 celebration dinner without getting the 100 tier credits. So they've added that to the terms. So I believe if you have the status from Wyndham this year, you're good to go. But next year, you're going to have to start earning the 100 tier credits. If you're going to Caesars properties, you're probably going to earn them anyway. And, you know, 100 tier credits, $100 spent, not a huge amount to deal with, but just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I can't remember, like, JetBlue Mosaic gave me Founders Card, and for some reason, I was not able to get a lot of things because I don't know if it was like something weird about how I'd registered my business or something like that, but I've like completely ignored Founders Card ever since. I do think that, you know, ever having status at a hotel casino can be very useful. Like I've said for the umpteenth time, one day, Sean, I will not have to say this anymore. I need to get back to Vegas to use any of these things.
And Boston related, Wynn has said that they're going to have a status match, and we'll cover this when it comes out, but they said they're going to have one sometime April, May. So maybe there'll be an opportunity with Wynn, which, you know, could help you over there in Boston as well. So that's another thing to think about. It's not just in Vegas. You know, I've talked about how I did the Atlantic City matches, got free cruises, and that gets you benefits elsewhere. So a lot more and more of the gaming industry is, you know, not specific to one market. So sometimes getting status one place can help you other places. And sometimes statuses are matched in one market and not the other. But, you know, it's definitely a game where, you know, you could get crazy doing it and it could just, I don't know, it's dizzying at times. But yeah, even for a regular travel hacker, even somebody who doesn't gamble, I don't really gamble, Joe. I say that out loud, but I've had status. And one of my favorite moments was back in the day, maybe 6-7 years ago, I had a friend visit me and he was a big MGM gambler and he only had gold status. And at that time, Globalist gave you platinum status. And I loved just throwing out my platinum card. Here he was gambling all the time and I didn't gamble at all. And I had a better status than him. But of course, those were the days long gone with MGM. And, you know, one quick thing about Vegas, Rio, I checked in yesterday. I was in the VIP line, Joe. I saw 9 people through the VIP line when I was in the room. Nobody had luggage. They were all Hyatt Globalists and nobody had luggage. So I think that tells you how that's going at Rio. A lot of people are catching on.
Amazing. You know, well, I'm glad they're checking in. I'm glad everybody wins. Okay. Help the Las Vegas economy and, you know, help the globalists to keep on globaling.
Yeah, it's amazing. My last stay was 4 nights. It triggered the bonus journeys twice. So I ended up earning 6,500 points on a $93 stay. And, you know, obviously it gives me the credit and everything else. So, you know, basically free. My family was able to use breakfast a couple days. My son actually stayed in the room for a couple days. So it all worked out good. So I guess we're bookending the show with Disney. My ordering was wrong. I should have talked about this at the beginning as well. But I wanted to talk about Swan Reserve because Benji did write about it on the site this week. So we have an article to accompany this talk. Joe, Marriott is the best option, right, for staying on Disney property. But you do have, what, the Hilton and the Waldorf Astoria. You have JW Marriott. There are some other properties. But I feel like the best place to stay is that area near Epcot. And that's where the Swan and Dolphin are. And then they have the Swan Reserve, which is the nicer, newer property there. And do you agree that that is, if you're looking to go to Disney World on points, that that is the best area to stay in? And then what are your thoughts on Swan Reserve? Is it worth, you know, dealing with over the regular Swan and Dolphin?
I think that's definitely the best option to stay in miles and points wise. I mean, you'll have even non like true miles and points people. They will sign up for the Bonvoy credit cards just to get the 5 free night certificates and hope that it's either going to be 50,000 or less at the Swan Dolphin or Swan Reserve, or they can, you know, it's close enough that they can pay the, you can't pay the difference. So you just need to be $50,000, 50,000 points or less. It's the best place to go because you get the best combo of not only location, which is really important, but also you get actual like theme park benefits. Like you get the extended evening hours. So I was there over spring break last week, and the last 2 hours of the night, which unfortunately last week was 11 to 1 a.m. at Magic Kingdom, you get so much more done in the summer. It's like cooler, it's less crowds, lower wait times. And so that is truly, and you're essentially still treated like a Disney guest when you're there. Even the Four Seasons, which of course is fancier and more expensive, that's really close to Magic Kingdom. You still can't like walk to the Magic Kingdom or anything. And so there's no like benefit there. In terms of the three properties, I've found the Swan Reserve the least interesting to me. That's the only one I haven't stayed at yet, but it's the least interesting to me because it's a further walk. And, you know, I'm all about getting to the parks as quickly as possible. So those are kind of my thoughts on those, but great points values if you can get it for either if you have the Bonvoy points or if you have the certs and it's 50,000 points or less.
And I think in these days where Disney hotels are less special than they ever were, as they've sort of de-themed a lot of them, this makes a lot of sense. And you're close enough to walk to Epcot, close enough to walk to Hollywood Studios. The buses don't take long to Magic Kingdom and stuff. So I feel like it is a good value. I think the rooms look great at Swan Reserve. That's why I would like to stay there, because that was my complaint about staying at, I think Dolphin is where I stayed. I forget. I've only stayed on in that area. I've only stayed in those hotels once.
It feels like a convention hotel. Yeah, there's no like charm or anything to it.
But a lot of the sort of renovation, well, I've talked on this show before how I do not like Disney hotels the way they're run. You know, if you think a Disney hotel will cost 2-star levels higher than it actually is, that's my opinion. But if you don't value like being immersed in the Disney theming, because there are nice things like in that area, you have the boardwalk, but they just renovated the boardwalk and they took out a lot of the unique, cool things that made it, you know, unique and cool. And some of the others like the Yacht and Beach Club are nice, but again, they've taken out some of the cool, you know, very unique theming and gone with more modern styles in these hotels. But if you don't care about that, you want the best location, that's good. And we have this article to talk about it. Benji's a big fan of Swan Reserve, but again, I think I wanted to just mention it because I do think that's the best option for points. You know, Bonnet Creek, where the Hilton and the Waldorf Astoria, there's a Wyndham there, or the downtown Disney area where you have, you know, Best Western and Holiday Inn and Hilton's over there. Those locations just don't do it for me. I don't consider myself, they don't feel Disney, like I'm on Disney property as much, you know, even if you do get some benefits as well. Whereas if you stay at the Swan and Dolphin or the Swan Reserve, you really are in the middle of it all, and you're surrounded by Disney resorts, and you can walk to the hotels. You got the Skyliner from Epcot. You really do feel like you're on a Disney experience, and you can get that with a credit card and avoid paying $400, $500, $600, $700 or more a night for the hotels that are surrounding them, like the Boardwalk, the Yacht and Beach Club, which can be even higher than that at certain times. So, yeah, just a good reminder, miles and points still working for Disney. You know, didn't you? You had a blog for a while talking about miles and points in Disney specifically, right? Before Disney deciphered and everything else.
We started it right when Chase killed all the Disney redemptions, which really killed the site before it even came up. I should be clear. I was saying that the dolphin rooms are the ones that feel like a boring convention. But honestly, if you're not there for the theming, if you're just there to enjoy the theme parks, like, who cares? Like, you're just sleeping in your room. Anyway, I know we're running a little late, Sean, but I am editing and I don't mind. Because you brought up Miles to the Magic, which was killed very quickly, I thought we could nerd out a little bit about what's going on with Google and killing niche blogs and just how the SEO has become a mess. I'll give the short version because I hear this from Leslie all the time, who writes at tripswithtykes.com, has been writing. You, Leslie, and myself, we all started our blogs around the same time. Well, you know, you had family around the world before, but the current iteration of your blog. You two are wildly successful. I'm here just editing your stuff. I'm just here as an employee of you all.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that, given your, you know, prominence in the travel agent community and Disney communities. But yeah, it's, you know, it's been rough. Google made some changes late last year, but I think they keep changing things and implementing them. But there's a much more of a focus on AI. And basically, Google's used everybody's information in their sites to feed their AI. And then they're trying to do everything to not send people to smaller sites, especially. So when you see Google results, you'll often not see more niche blogs or smaller blogs. And so it's just a changing landscape, right? And we've talked about how social media has become more prevalent, and a lot of people are getting their information from short form video and other forms of social media. So maybe just in some ways, blogs are dying in that way. But, you know, unfortunately, it just means you have less voices out there, or you're not going to be able to reach them as much. And some blogs, now we do a lot more news stuff, and so we haven't seen quite the drop off, but some blogs have lost 90% of their traffic. And just imagine building a business for 8 or 9 or 10 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, you just got 10%. And I think that's why it's important to build an audience, and why these new forms of social media, podcasts, videos are so important. And why I like doing it a lot better too, because I can build a much more personal connection, I think, by talking than just by writing. It's weird. People have a much stronger relationship to you, I think, when you're doing these forms of communication. But it does stink. And there's a lot of great creators, a lot of great bloggers who are struggling right now. And, you know, always a good reminder to support the ones that you really enjoy, because it's just not financially viable for so many people anymore.
Yeah, and if I can soapbox a little bit on behalf of Leslie, who I talk about this quite often, one of the problems with Google's updates has been, like, the way Google SEO works is it kind of assigns different websites a, for lack of a better term, like a trust factor, right? And so, you know, as your website builds, like, you earn a larger and larger trust factor. Now, the problem is for these independent websites, what has happened is people have realized that miles and points, let's just talk about miles and points or travel, right? That is a very lucrative space. Now, you will see when you search on Google, you know, it used to be that the points guy was at the top of like every single SEO search. But now you're starting to see random things like Forbes or CNN or, you know, like all these reputable websites that became reputable and earned Google trust via other things are now writing about, you know, miles and points or travel. Now, a friend of mine, Caroline, she works at Forbes. Like, she knows her stuff. So Forbes, like, and then, you know, Dia works there or has worked there. Becky Pecora writes for them. Like, there are people writing good material on there, but there are other websites, and Leslie has shown me examples, especially Disney related ones, but other travel related ones, where you will read the article and it's either written by someone who didn't know anything about it, or it was even worse, written by AI, which also didn't know anything about it. And Google is still rating these websites that were trustworthy for other reasons as being trustworthy for travel or whatever niche topic you want to talk about. And that's what's hurting really these independent creators. So I'm off the soapbox, but I reiterate what you said, Sean. You really have to support the writers in the space that you really like. And I found myself going back to the 2000s and actually typing in people's websites. Or, you know, Sean, I'll tell you, I'm trying to support us, right? When I'm searching for things miles and points related, I will type in you know, Spirit carry-on bag fees, milestomemories.com, so that our stuff will come up first. Or with Disney, I'll be Genie Plus Trips with Tykes.com to support Leslie, because yeah, it's only a small thing, but a lot of these content creators have been really hit hard, and they were trustworthy creators, and that's the thing that really sucks.
And to your point, a lot of them have gone to these sites. Caroline's amazing in Forbes and CNN. Andrew Kanesh used to write for Points Guy. He's amazing too. So it's not like they don't know what they're doing, but the goals of these corporate sites are different, I think, than personal blogs or smaller niche blogs as well. And I think there's room for all of it. It's unfortunate that, you know, Google has decided to, you know, favor these big sites over the smaller ones instead of trying to find what the best information was. And that is sort of the difference. And then when you add AI and the ability to replicate information, study what's out there, it just confuses everything. And I think that's the world we're headed into. I don't know how we change that, you know. And if you want good voices, people who have experience, then what you really need is to support them in whatever way you can. Like you said, whether it's just going directly to their sites, supporting them on social media. And, you know, we're doing okay here. That's not what this is about at all. You know, we definitely appreciate the support. We appreciate when you guys leave us great reviews. When you use our credit card links, that does help us, because we have had a hit in Google traffic for sure, just not to some of the extent that other sites have had. But, you know, this is the age of social media personalities and getting to know creators. And, you know, it's just a reminder that there are people who do this for a living, and that takes a certain level of your life, a commitment. And, you know, maybe a lot of times, some of them have to go get jobs at a place like Forbes or CNN, or some of them have to go do something else, and that's fine. You know, maybe this is just the free market doing it, but I don't think a lot of people are aware that this change happened. And so I guess the reason we're talking about it is to kind of highlight it, but just understand that you're not probably being served information in the same way. And in Miles and Points, like we said, I think, you know, CNN, Forbes specifically, I know the teams over there. I think they're all, or at least the people leading and the people that I know that work there, are great people who know this. They're former bloggers, people who started out independently and moved on. But in other niches, it's bad. And there's people that don't know anything, or sites completely written by AI. And it's becoming increasingly difficult if you're not an expert in that niche. Like if you're hardcore into Miles and Points, you probably know who the good people are and the bad people, and you probably know how to navigate this. But just imagine something that you're not hardcore in and you're trying to get information. The world's not a better place with these changes from Google, and it's unfortunate, but it is the way it is. And, you know, we just wanted people to know that it's happening, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. Like, some of the information is just flat out wrong, and you just have to, I think it's important to like confirm with multiple sources and ideally find someone who knows what they're talking about. I've seen, Leslie has sent me Disneyland articles that have talked about, I think like it said, like, yeah, you should really go see, if you want to learn history, go see Carousel of Progress at Disneyland, which doesn't exist at Disneyland. Like it was like that wrong, some of these things that I've seen, and I've seen in other niches as well. My beloved video game industry hasn't been hit yet, but I'm pretty sure that's going to come soon too.
That reminds me of the article I saw shared on social media last week, the anti-Boeing sentiment. Everybody's scared to get on Boeing planes, which to me is ridiculous. Boeing, we talked about all the bad things they did and how they need to do better, but I'm still not afraid to fly on a Boeing plane. But in that article, they called it a Boeing Airbus. And yeah, I got a lot of flack for that. But you have, whether it's AI or people who don't know what they're talking about, writing about things that they don't know what they're talking about just to get clicks. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know what happens over the long term to the people who do know what they're talking about, the people who have developed the knowledge, because it just doesn't, it just becomes not worth it anymore.
Yeah, it's sad, man. I've seen people like saying, like people who have been doing this for like 10 years saying like, I'm looking for a second job now. Like they don't want to necessarily quit what they're doing because they love it, but like they have to make ends meet, and it's just sad. So support the people that you like. I know that's why a lot of people have moved to like paid newsletters or Patreons or whatever. Of course, Miles and Memories has a Patreon, probably closed right now, but you know, it opens from time to time. I think it's important to support the content creators you like. Yeah. Is it annoying to subscribe to them? Sure. Maybe like that's an extra $5. That's an extra coffee a month or whatever. But for a lot of content creators, like you're keeping them in business. And I think that that's worth doing, at least in this current climate.
Yeah. And to close it out, thanks to everybody who supports. We have two Patreons. We have the Vegas Patreon, which we have a great community over there, Vegas people. And then obviously we have the Diamond Lounge, which has a great community. And I really am appreciative of that group. And, you know, it's fun to do it and to create a community and to be able to have people share this information. But also it does help us out tremendously, especially with all the changes, having that. So it makes a huge difference to us as a personal example and then to everybody else, I think. So yeah, just do it. And I do support the creators who I enjoy as well. So I do pay it forward in that way. And I think that's going to do it, Joe, for this week's extra long podcast, since you're editing and you didn't mind us going over. So where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me at As Joe Flies, all of our social media. I have 4 or 5 episodes that are going to come out from this spring break chip on Disney Deciphered. So you can check out our podcast there. Leslie is currently in Japan and swinging by Tokyo Disney. So we're going to be talking about that as well. We're going to have Sean come on to talk about Disneyland Paris. Don't forget, we haven't forgotten about you, Sean. And so tons of great content for the next 2 months, Disney related, if you didn't turn the podcast off in the first 5 minutes when you heard that I was talking about Disney. What about you, Sean?
At Miles to Memories, all over social media. We do have slots coming in and out on the Patreon, patreon.com/Miles to Memories for the Diamond Lounge, which gets you Slack access. We do private podcasts, chats every month, so it's a lot of fun there. And for all of our Vegas stuff, youtube.com/Miles to Memories. Thanks so much for listening. Again, we really appreciate the audience. This means a ton that I've been able to do this for a living for over 10 years. I mean, what a dream. So thank you again for listening, for supporting us, for supporting your favorite creators, and for making all of this possible. Talk to you next time.
See ya.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.